Writer Ayelet Waldman knows all about the trouble you can get into writing about mother issues. In 2005, she wrote an essay for the New York Times Modern Love column, where she confessed to loving her husband more than her children. She was, she said then, a bad mother. Now, in her book titled Bad Mother, Waldman recounts many stories about what she calls the perils and joys of trying to be a decent mother in a world intent on making you feel like a bad one. As she told Anne Strangechamps, that modern love controversy was a perfect example.
What I was responding to was really this phenomenon of all these women I knew, none of whom were having sex at all, that their relationships were simply devoid of the intimate with their husbands. But they had these incredibly intense, impassioned, passionate bonds, and I don't mean sexual at all, bonds with their children. I felt like these two things were connected, that when I started looking around at why is it that I'm, you know, one of the only people I know who still is having an intimate relationship with my husband after, you know, four children and all this time, and why aren't my friends, I realized that the difference between them and me was that they were all very good mothers. There were mothers who put their children before everything else at the heart of their lives, who focused all of their passion and ardor and devotion on their children. And that I had somehow managed to miss that boat. You know, I mean, I still loved my children, absolutely, but they weren't the center of all of my attention and all of my passion the way they were for many of my friends.
So are you saying you felt like you were a good wife but a bad mother?
The sort of project of motherhood is one that fills me with both joy and anguish all the time. But what I would hear this kind of language, like, I'm so in love with my children. I'm so in love with the baby. And that's never how I felt. I mean, when I think about being in love, I think of being in love with my husband. He's the person who's the object of that kind of intensity of passion. You know, when I first wrote that article, everybody was talking about it. It was sort of the Amy Chua tiger mother of that moment.
And you wound up invited on Oprah. Weren't you sort of trotted out in front of a room full of hostile mothers?
Well, it was pretty amazing. You know, they called me from Oprah and they said, come on the show because Oprah agrees with you. And I was only too happy to go on the show. I had these visions of, you know, selling Jonathan Franzen like quantities of my books. What I didn't realize was that they had sort of collected this audience full of women who hated me. And it was this amazing phenomenon because, I mean, really, one, as I was walking on the stage, they had selected one woman to come up from the audience. And she kind of leapt out of her chair shrieking, let me out. Her. You know, and I really thought, oh my God, this is like Jerry Springer. I am about to be on Jerry Springer.
Listening to this, don't you have to wonder, why do we care? Why would people care what kind of mother you are?
You know, I asked this question of Lisa Belkin, who writes for the New York Times Magazine. She's experienced the same kind of vitriolic reaction. I mean, she wrote an article many years ago that was a cover piece in the New York Times Magazine that was about women with law degrees and business school degrees who had chosen to leave professional life and be stay-at-home mothers, these kind of uber-successful stay-at-home mothers. And she suffered this unbelievable backlash for that. And I asked her, you know, when I was sort of crying in my tea about the people leaving notes on my gate saying that they know where I live and my children should be taken away from me, which, like, the implication being what, that they're going to do the taking? I sort of called her up sobbing about that. And she said, you know what, Ayelet, when you write about women like us, primarily white, although not exclusively, primarily middle class, though not exclusively, you are not so much writing an essay as you're writing a Rorschach blot. And people read the Rorschach blot bringing all of their own psychodrama to it. So all of their own anxieties, all of their own fears, all of their own feelings of deep ambivalence. And it's all this sort of comparison that we engage in order to make ourselves feel better.
One of the things that seems to me like such a tragedy, really, about where so many women are today is that despite however many decades of the women's movement, women today seem to have more ways than ever to feel that they are failures. You know,
exactly.
Either you're a failure because you are staying home with your child and you've eschewed having a career, or you're a failure because you're going to work and not staying home with your child. And we've had 2 decades of this and we're still not over it.
Right, exactly. I mean, and here's why. Here's why. Because you know what? The feminists were right. And the way they were the most right was when they said the personal is political. Because we have taken it and we have done, there's been all these changes in our ambitions, in our aspirations. and everything remains personal. So if you have trouble juggling work and home, a phrase I hate to use, but, you know, for lack of a better one, then that failure is your personal failure. So if you feel ambivalent, like you're stretched too thin at work, you're stretched too thin at home, that's your personal failure. If you pack it in and decide to stay home, that's your failure. If you farm your kid out to a nanny and go to work, that's your failure. And what we missed in this conversation was the sense that it wasn't just the women who needed to change. The men needed to change too, and though society needed to change. What troubles me most is this strange coincidence in how sort of the professional life in many, many different sort of jobs has completely changed. So just when women entered the workforce in great numbers, the workplace became a place that it was virtually impossible to both excel in and maintain a reasonable amount of sort of actual face time with your kids. Mm-hmm. And then that's when we started to do things like talk about quality time. And, you know, nobody really wants quality time. What people really usually want is quantity time. They just can't have it, so they try to make the best of what they have.
We should play out some of what you're saying in terms of some specific stories from your own experience raising your kids. For instance, a lot of women feel like particular failures around things like breastfeeding.
I mean, it was my fourth baby. I should have been a natural at it. Not only was I not a natural, but the baby nearly died in his first 2 weeks of life because he wasn't getting any nutrition. By the time anybody figured out that he was, you know, he had no latch, he was horribly dehydrated, had probably not consumed more than an ounce a day for 2 weeks. It was a complete disaster and catastrophe. And then I went through this thing where I was pumping every 2 hours for 6 months, round the clock. I almost never spent time with my actual baby because I was always hooked up to this pump. And this nadir came at this moment where I was standing in a cafe. I was feeding the baby from a sling or a baby Bjorn, and I was feeding him from a bottle. And the milk in the bottle was vaguely purple because I had horrible thrush, and it was dyed from the gentian violet homeopathic remedy I was using because God forbid I wouldn't take any actual, you know, whatever that would kill the thrush. And I had pumped it at about 4 a.m, and I'm sort of standing there bleary-eyed giving him this purple milk. And this woman taps me on the shoulder and she says, "You know, breast is best." I had 4 kids. I should have known that what was really important in that first 6 months of my baby's life was that I not freak out. And that if he had formula and a mother who was sane, that was probably going to be a lot better for both his life and my life than if he was, you know, he was drinking pumped breast milk and had a mother whose entire life was falling apart.
It's so interesting that some of the most difficult areas for mothers, the areas in which we feel the most pressure, have to do with feeding our children. You know, from breastfeeding to fast forward to the years when there's so much pressure on parents of young children to feed them correctly.
Absolutely. And my kids go to the most adorable, wonderful school. I love my kids' school. It's supposed to be waste-free lunch, so everything must be packed in reusable containers, so no Ziploc bags. And it's all supposed to be healthy, and there's not supposed to be any sugar. Well, at some point, I just realized, you know what I should do? I should just send plastic food. You know that kind you buy, like in Japanese restaurants where they show you that it's like the sushi models? Because my kids are not eating this pristine, incredibly laboriously created, sugar-free, nutritious food that's carefully packed in bento boxes because, God forbid, there should be a Ziploc bag. No, what they're doing is I'm sending it and it's coming back uneaten. So I'm just going to send them like little bags full of plastic food. And then when they come home, I'll give them Cheetos. Organic Cheetos. Come on. I'm not a bad mother, but Cheetos.
Another thing that makes a lot of us feel like a bad mother is talking to kids about issues that we don't really want to discuss from our own pasts. You wrote openly about how you had been what you'd call a slutty teenager.
Yes, I was a slutty teenager. But, you know, I came into my experience with having a teenage girl, having a teenage daughter, thinking two things. One, I wanted to save her from all the pain that I went through because I was certainly too young when I started having sex, and my experiences were not all or even mostly positive, my early sexual experiences. But so there was that impulse to protect her, and there was also the impulse to make her strong and powerful and both own her own sexuality and be able to enjoy it. And then there was this incredible sense of embarrassment. Like, if she asked me how old I was when I lost my virginity, what was I going to say? Oh, my God. So, you know, it was...
Because really, you were 14.
I was 14, yeah. Ay, gewalt. And I did, like I talk about in the book, I received as a sort of giveaway this package of candy-colored condoms, which, excuse me, are never going to be part of my life. I don't know what the market is for, like, lollipop condoms, but whatever. I had this package, and I thought, I was about to throw it away, then I thought to myself, no, I know what I'm going to do with these. And I went and I put them in my kid's bathroom. I just, you know, put them on the top shelf of the cupboard. That's it. And I actually even opened the bag so that there was no, like, oh, closed bag. Just open the bag. So I put this in their bathroom, and then like 6 months passed, something like that. And then one evening, I hear this sort of harrowing shriek from there, and I run to the bathroom, and my son and my daughter are standing looking at this, and they look at me and they say, "What are these?" And I said, "Well, what do you think they are?" And they said, "Are they condoms?" And I said, "Yes, those are." And they were. And my daughter says, "You are just so disgusting." And I launch into my whole rap about you have to be safe. And they're just like, "No, no, 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 no." And they walk out of the bathroom, leaving me with this bag of condoms, which I put back. And now it's all notes for the memoir about, you know, daughter of bad mother, forthcoming in 2021.
Yeah, that's the one she'll write.
Yes, it's her memoir, exactly.
Ayelet Waldman is a novelist and essayist. Her published works include several mommy track mysteries, like Death Gets a Time Out and The Big Nap, and the book Love and Other Impossible Pursuits. She spoke with Anne Strainchamps about her book Bad Mother.